as our final speaker, coming forward 50 more years to the present. We have Ed Meese. His biography is well known to all of you. I will only make two brief remarks. When he served as Attorney General, when the vacancy occurred, he was the President's first choice as Attorney General. And he now serves as a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution. To discuss the American thought of Ronald Reagan, I give you Ed Meese.
Thank you very much, Danny, and ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here in such distinguished company. But in a sense, I have a somewhat different mission than my other three colleagues who've spoken. In the first place, most of you have already heard Ronald Reagan's views, many of you from his own lips. And secondly, whereas Tocqueville, Lord Bryce, and Chesterton spoke as visitors from afar, Ronald Reagan's views are definitely those of a homegrown product. As a matter of fact, Ronald Reagan developed his view of America through the eyes of one who himself has had experienced what many would call the American dream. Namely, the rise of a poor boy from the Midwest to wealth and fame. He was almost the prototype of Horatio Alger, and indeed, one of the honors that were given to him was the Horatio Alger Award. His life story, actually, was the sort of thing out of which movies are made, or at least they were in the 40s and the 50s, in which a poor boy from humble but honest beginnings goes to various places, in this case, Hollywood. During the war, he served honorably, if not heroically, in a film squadron of the Army Air Force, returned to his occupation after the war, and then went on to considerable promise in that field. Then, of course, there is a second phase of his life with which we are more familiar in many cases, and that is when he turned from this honorable life and rise and success to become a candidate for political office, and ultimately to become a governor and then a president. I would suggest that his view of America, it was his view of America, actually, in which philosophy and values were very important to him, that caused him to go from the first phase of his life into the second. At the outset, let me make a few observations about Ronald Reagan's views, which can be found not only in his life, in his actions, but also in his speeches. First of all, he had, it was very interesting because there was in Ronald Reagan's view of America, as well as in the things that he did in his life, that combined a simplicity in one sense with a profundity in the other. He had a great reverence for the history and traditions of America. There was no question about that. And this was a deeply held, deeply felt reverence. He had an understanding of the national and ethnic roots and the heritage of our citizens who had come as immigrants or who were the descendants of immigrants in this country. And he had great respect for these qualities in a constructive rather than in a divisive way. He had a vivid sense of the best parts of the American character in terms of virtue. Patriotism, which he was not at all hesitant to express personally, whether it meant returning the salute of a Marine who was there at the entrance to the helicopter when he was president, or in discussing the values of our country. Loyalty both to country and to principle, and a sense of responsibility, which throughout his early life was kind of endemic to the American scene. He had an optimistic, almost an idealistic view of America as a country that looked to the future, and that provided opportunity which offered great potential for those who had the courage and the initiative to seize the moment. And one of the things that I think particularly characterized his life and his conduct, which was very different from many cynical politicians, was his not being afraid to let his deep emotional feelings for America show through in his words as well as in his actions. Many of you have heard his talks in the second phase of his life, the political phase in which he expressed those views. But if you go back to his early years, when he started to make speeches originally as a part of his interpretation of Hollywood to America as an actor and as president of the Screen Actors Guild, and then as an articulator of views of the free enterprise system for General Electric and the other companies for whom he did TV work, you will find an amazing similarity of his views as they developed then, which were quite different from what he politically professed to be at the time, which was a bleeding heart liberal. Indeed, the ideals and policies which resonated, which developed from his experiences in Hollywood and on the market circuit, were certainly the same policies that resonated so well with the American people in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. It was for that reason that I went back to 1952 to get one of his earliest speeches, and I'll read you just a few aspects of it. He said, "America is less of a place than an idea. And if it is an idea, and I believe that to be true, it is an idea that has been deep in the souls of man ever since man started his long trail from the swamps. It is nothing but the inherent love of freedom in each one of us, and the great ideological struggle that we find ourselves engaged in today," this is 1952, "is not a new struggle. It's the same old battle. We met it under the name of Hitlerism, we met it under the name of Kaiserism, and we have met it back through the ages in the name of every conqueror that has ever set upon a course of establishing his rule over mankind. It is simply the idea, the basis of this country and of our religion, the idea of the dignity of man, the idea that deep within the heart of each one of us is something so godlike and precious that no individual or group has a right to impose his or its will upon the people, that no group can decide for the people what is good for the people so well as they can decide for themselves." And then he went on to say, "I, in my own mind, have thought of America as a place in the divine scheme of things that was set aside as a promised land. It was set here, and the price of admission was very simple. The means of selection was very simple as to how this land should be populated. Any place in the world, and any person from those places, any person with the courage, with the desire to tear up the roots, to strive for freedom, to attempt and dare to live in a strange and foreign place, to travel half across the world was welcome here. And they have brought with them to the bloodstream that has become America that precious courage, the courage that they and they alone in their community, in their nation, in their family, had in the first place, to this land, the hometown, to strive for something better for themselves and for their children and their children's children. I believe that God, in shedding his grace on this country, has always, in his divine scheme of things, kept an eye on our land and guided it as a promised land for these people." Well, in that speech in 1952, he kind of summed up the themes that would carry him through the next 35 or 40 years as he talked about the various religious aspects, his views on immigration, the roots of the people, and so on. Actually, his views were even reflected, these views of America were even reflected in his conduct of foreign policy. He wrote in his book of memoirs entitled The American Life how he dealt with Gorbachev, starting in their early meetings and on, and in which he tried to impart to Gorbachev his view of America. It particularly came up when he was talking about human rights in the Soviet Union itself. And he talks about the meeting that he had in Moscow in May of 1988, and the first time that he could get Gorbachev alone privately, he brought up the subject of human rights. And he said, "I brought up a thought that had been expressed to me in a letter from a recent immigrant to America." And the immigrant wrote this, "Americans," he said, "came from every corner of the world. But once they're in America, they are assimilated in a way that is unique in the world. An immigrant can live in France," he said, the president now quoting this letter to him, "an immigrant can live in France, but not become a Frenchman. He can live in Germany, but may not become a German. He can live in Japan, but not become a Japanese. But anyone from any part of the world can come to America and become an American. Our people have diverse backgrounds, but they are united when they see any people discriminated against simply because of their ethnic origin or religious belief." And that was how he led into the subject of human rights and ultimately actually persuaded Gorbachev that if, as long as we didn't press this publicly, it would be well if Gorbachev would allow many of the Soviet Jews to emigrate and to go to Israel and other places around the world, something that actually happened as a result of this conversation and these views. He often talked about his desire to have Gorbachev view America as he saw it. And he said he had one fantasy that never, unfortunately, got to be played out. And that is that he would take Gorbachev in a helicopter and take him throughout, particularly the Midwest. He really was true to his roots. He never quite got away from the Midwest as being the heart of America. But as he said, he would like to take Gorbachev there and fly over any factory or any housing area and let Gorbachev pick the house or the factory and then land and let Gorbachev talk to that individual and learn how they were the owner of the car or the boat in front of the house or how they received the benefits of employment in the factory so that they could, so that Gorbachev, who had no background in this, could hear from himself the fact that it was indeed the workers and the citizens of the country that were the owners of the country as well. And he said, the greatness of America, of course, doesn't lie in its houses and cars and material riches. Democracy triumphed in the Cold War because it was a battle of values between one system that gave preeminence to the state and another that gave preeminence to the individual and freedom. The themes of the individual making his or her own decisions and freedom were paramount in Ronald Reagan's view of this country. But at the same time that he valued this country, he also had this sense of an immigrant or a descendant of an immigrant as to the lack of inconsistency in reverence for the old values and the old history and traditions at the same time as the love of the country in which people lived currently. He used to always enjoy talking about his own Irish heritage. And at the annual dinner of the Irish American Historical Society in 1981, the first year that he was president, he talked of his Irish great-grandfather who came to America from the village of Ballyporeen in County Tipperary in Ireland. And he said, I go even beyond that. Now that I've become president, people start telling me things that I never had access to before. And he said, I now learned that my family came from one of four tribes of Tara, which from the year 200 until about 900 AD defended the only pass through the Slieve Bloom Mountains, and their motto was the hills forever. He talked about his father, who was proud of his Irish heritage, and he said that there was one thing, though, that always puzzled him. His father used to say with an obvious great deal of pride, he said, the Irish are the only people in America that built the jails and then filled them. Then he said, finally, I found out later on what that meant. He didn't mean that they filled him by being convicted of crimes or even because of their unfortunate relationship to the alcohol that Chesterton talked about, but rather that they became police officers and filled them with other people, which was the sense of what his father had been talking about. He also was an avid reader, and he incorporated in his views the thoughts of others. Indeed, when he talked to the Conservative Political Action Conference in 1981, he talked about the intellectual leaders who had shaped American thought. He talked about Kirk and Hayek and Hazlitt and Friedman and many others. And then he quoted Frank Meyer. He said it was Frank Meyer who reminded us that the robust individualism of the American experience was part of the deeper current of Western learning and culture. He, Meyer, pointed out that a respect for law, an appreciation for tradition, and regard for the social consensus that gives stability to our public and private institutions, these civilized ideas must still motivate us, even as we seek a new economic prosperity based on reducing government interference in the marketplace. Well, perhaps the views of Ronald Reagan came to the greatest notice as far as the political life of America in the speech that he gave for Barry Goldwater in October of 1964. And instead of expressing there in that speech his views of what America is, he particularly emphasized his view of what America isn't. Because there he had quoted Senator Clark of Pennsylvania, who in not obviously in the Goldwater camp, but in the other camp, had defined liberalism as, quote, meeting the material needs of the masses through the full power of centralized government, as though this was the acme of where the American people should be going. Well, his comment in regard to that was vintage Reagan. He said, well, I for one resent it when a representative of the people refers to you and me, the free men and women of this country, as, quote, the masses, unquote. This is a term we haven't applied to ourselves in America. But beyond that, the full power of centralized government, this was the very thing the founding fathers sought to minimize. They knew that governments don't control things. A government can't control the economy without controlling people. And they knew when a government sets out to do that, it must use force and coercion to achieve its purpose. They also knew, those founding fathers, that outside of its legitimate functions, government does nothing as well or as economically as the private sector of the economy. One of the views that Ronald Reagan had of the United States was of a nation that accepted its responsibility for world leadership and for assisting those who sought freedom elsewhere. And there are many quotes of his, particularly during the period when he was defending to the nation successfully his rebuilding of the armed forces of our country in the early part of the 1980s. There are many quotes that we could cite from this, but particularly he liked to quote Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was one of his real favorites, and many times he would quote Roosevelt as he was saying more than a half century earlier the things that were necessary in order to carry out the responsibilities of this nation. And that was the essence, really, of how Ronald Reagan saw our responsibilities. It was why we had, for example, the Reagan Doctrine, which was more than just containment of the Soviet Union, but which had to do with giving active support to freedom fighters around the world. This was, in a sense, a part of what he saw as the view of America, that it wasn't enough that we had freedom for ourselves, but that we should actually support those who were seeking freedom elsewhere. One thing that characterized Ronald Reagan's view of America was the direct connection between religion, morality, and the national interest. At the National Prayer Breakfast, 1982, after he had returned to his office after undergoing a considerable period of convalescence after the shooting attempt on his life in March of 1981, he said, I believe this blessed land was set apart in a very special way, a country created by men and women who came here not in search of gold, but in search of God. They would be free people living under the law with faith in their maker and their future. And then he went on to wind up by saying, in the American heart is a spirit of love, of caring, and a willingness to work together. Well, this was then a combination of the views that Ronald Reagan expressed that came from a lifetime of experience, but which also came from a very real dedication and a knowledge of the traditions and the history of our country. He talked a lot about the Statue of Liberty in his speeches. He often talked about the torch having been called by the poet the lamp beside the golden door. And he said, that's the entrance to America, and it still is. The glistening hope of that lamp is still ours. Every promise, every opportunity is still golden in this land. Indeed, one of the things that he used, one of the symbolisms that he used most often, and I know all of you have probably heard this at one time or another, was the concept of a shining city on the hill. Actually, what he was doing, and he gave credit, unlike Joe Biden, to the author of that phrase, John Winthrop, who, as President Reagan said, on the deck of the tiny Arabella off the coast of Massachusetts in 1630, called the pilgrims together and talked about the potential that they had, as Thomas Paine later talked about it, to reinvent the world over again. And how, if they succeeded in developing a shining city on the hill, they would be praised. But if they did not succeed, if they did not have the courage, if they did not have the initiative, if they did not have the dedication to do that, as he said then, they would be made a story and a byword through all the world. Well, this theme came back again and again in Ronald Reagan's speeches because it reflected that point that I made earlier about his optimism, that indeed we did have the opportunity to do things no people had ever done before. And it wasn't just a figure of speech with him. What he said was what he believed in his heart. And so his view of America was in a way a very personal view, but at the same time it was a view that resonated with the American people because I think it touched their own aspirations, their own values, their own thoughts. And he finalized his farewell speech to the country when he left office just prior to the inauguration of a new president in January of 89 in his farewell address. Left office, he demonstrated a consistency of view that was his basis for thought and action throughout his public life, and which he translated into political and policy successes during his two terms as president, and which still stand as a desirable model for America and its people. Thank you.